This is a HeadGum Original.
Remember the part in Forrest Gump where he starts a business? The Bubba Gump Shrimp Company. It's a huge success, and the story of how it all happens involves a few twists of fate. It was inspired by his friend Bubba, who died in the Vietnam War, and funded by money he made from an endorsement deal thanks to his reputation as an international ping pong player. There's a certain amount of luck involved, but there's also a lot of hard work that leads to Forrest Gump becoming a successful entrepreneur. If they weren't fictional, he and his business partner, Lieutenant Dan, would fit right in as guests on the School of Hustle podcast from GoDaddy. Join travel host, tour company owner, and YouTube creator Sarah Funk as she explores the stories of real entrepreneurs who are making their own way in the world. Learn about their successes, struggles, and strategies for how they get creative and thrive, and get inspired to apply them to your own business. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. In October of 2013, Tom Hanks was doing an interview to promote the movie Captain Phillips, and he was asked why he'd never been in a superhero movie.
No, they don't ask me, man. I keep trying to... Come on. I can do it.
It's hard to tell if Tom Hanks is being completely serious or if he's just having a little fun in response to an interviewer's question. It seems unlikely that no one has offered him a good role in a superhero movie by now. But maybe they haven't. And he hasn't turned up in a superhero movie yet. So if we take this at face value, it's something Tom and I have in common. A few months ago, I got an opportunity to audition for something so big that I cannot tell you anything about it. Legally, I signed documents. Some things I signed might say that I can never tell anybody anything about the things I signed. But let's just say that after auditioning for multiple small roles in superhero films and TV series over the past several years, I was now in the running for something big. Maybe even life-changingly big, he said, careful not to reveal anything that could be considered a violation of a signed non-disclosure agreement. I needed some advice, some help. So I decided to assemble a team of sorts, a squad, a trio of professional actors who have been through what I was now facing, each of them possessing a different casting-related superpower and origin story. One who successfully booked a role in a Marvel film I also auditioned for. Another who was cast and then cut from a Marvel movie, only to find redemption in another medium. And finally, a leading actor in the very first Marvel feature film, which ultimately paved the way for the most successful cinematic endeavor of all time, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Oh, and by the way, I'm not saying that the thing I auditioned for was a Marvel thing. I legally can't say that. It could have been DC. It could have been something else entirely. You'll just have to draw your own conclusions, legally.
Let me play the bad guy against Batman. I'll do anything. Come on, call me. They've never asked. What do I got to do?
I don't know. Academy Award winner, two times over.
I know. Doesn't happen.
This is Dead Eyes, a podcast about one actor's quest to find out why Tom Hanks fired him from a small role in the 2001 HBO miniseries Band of Brothers.
My name is Connor Ratliff. I'm an actor and comedian. 20 years ago, I was fired by Tom Hanks. Now I roam the streets of show business, searching for answers and opportunities. They call me Dead Eyes.
God, I want to throw a shield at somebody, you know? I want that. And I don't want to play the guy in the suit who tells the superheroes what's going on. I don't want to be that guy.
I received the first email a few months ago with explicit instructions for how I was to put myself on tape. At the time, I had a decision to make. I have, over the course of the 2020 pandemic, grown a fairly enormous COVID beard. And without revealing too much, the role I was auditioning for was one where I thought it might help if I had a large beard. To be clear, the breakdown didn't specify that the character I was reading for should have a beard. But it was my gut feeling, my spidey sense, if you will, that it might help. Regardless, if I send in an audition tape featuring me with a large beard, that was the version of me that would be under consideration. That meant that if they liked me, there was the possibility that I could be stuck with it for a long time. Months. Maybe years. But if I chose to shave it now, it could hurt my chances of booking the role at all. Shaving the beard could have been my kryptonite. So I kept the beard. I filmed the audition. And I sent it to the powers that be. All that was left was to await their judgment. And I was dreading it. It's stressful being under consideration for a superhero thing. I cannot tell you why or how specifically it is stressful. But I think I can tell you about the time that I auditioned for a small role in the 2017 movie Spider-Man Homecoming, and that I did not book it. I think I can tell you that. And I know I can tell you that the person who did book the role was a guy named Zach Cherry, a friend of mine who books work constantly and for good reason. He's funny and talented and a great guy to work with.
Spider-Man!
Okay, Spider-Man! Don't flip! Yeah!
Not bad!
He's the kind of person I would cast in things if I were casting something. And there's a good chance that you've already seen him in a movie or TV show and that he has already made you laugh.
Am I the most invested in you as that character?
Certainly. Far more invested than me or anyone I've ever met.
Or Sony or...
Yeah, definitely.
So your character is street vendor. Just street vendor.
Yeah.
And you say, do a flip, and Spider-Man does a flip.
Mm-hmm.
I auditioned for this part also.
I remember seeing you that day, but it not connecting in my head that we were auditioning for the same part. You were leaving the office as I was going in.
Yeah, so he'd seen me do that character.
So you sort of alley-ooped it to me.
It's so funny when you go to audition for a Marvel thing, because it's always the same place where it feels like my image of where actors audition for things in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
Like, there are some places when you're auditioning in New York, there's a certain kind of modern casting office that you go into. And this is one of the few places that if I was imagining being an actor in New York in 1987, this is the kind of office I would imagine.
It's pretty nondescript. And
it doesn't look like a casting office. No, yeah. They even have like a little like weird password that's like how you get in, you know. Oh, like,
I don't even remember that.
It's listed as something. It's not listed like casting office.
Right.
Some places are. They're like clearly a casting office.
Yeah, it says casting on that.
Sometimes I've auditioned for Marvel things and I've gotten a fake script and they say this is a fake script. But the street vendor was legitimately like the scene.
What did it say instead of spider guy? Because I remember that it was not, I was not told that it was Spider-Man. It was like clear that it was, but it was like it was had like a code name.
It was like, are you that spider guy from YouTube?
It said that in the...
I think so. Huh. Let me see if I don't know if I'm breaking a thing, but I bet I have it in my email somewhere.
Yeah, I don't remember what the side said.
I
would have assumed that they changed it slightly or just didn't include the word spider. If not, that's terrible.
Security.
Yeah.
I have it here. Untitled Marvel Sony feature. But then it says, a.k.a. Spider-Man Homecoming.
Really?
In the email. So it's like, casting would like to see you for the role of street vendor. Sides are attached. I'll also be sending you an NDA. Okay. Oh, no. Bleep all of this. This is actually one of the craziest looking sides I've ever seen. I've forgotten how crazy this looks. Look at what these sides look like. It's so small. That's the smallest sides I've ever seen for anything audition.
It's like four lines, but it's, you know, full page.
The watermark of my name is so much bigger than the text of
and
the...
very clear. You can really read that whole watermark.
Okay, so I'm going to do the scene. So exterior, ledge, day. That's interesting. It says the scene takes place on the ledge. I guess it does.
Yeah.
Even though you're down on the street.
Sure. Ledge / street, you know.
The masked man.
See, that's what I was wondering about. I do remember that it was like slightly off.
But the email said this is for the untitled Sony Marvel project, aka Spider-Man Homecoming. The masked man perches atop a building ledge, surveying the city. A wide shot reveals that his ledge is only two stories high. That's not true in the movie, is
it? Sort of.
Isn't he way up high?
That's sort of written as if it's played as a gag, but
yeah,
it's not really played as a gag.
It looks like he's up on the roof of a building.
Yeah, he's on, but it's not like a skyscraper. It's like a family's house or
it's
something.
It's 4 or 5 stories high. Yeah, it's not 2 stories high, because that sounds like a joke that didn't make it into the movie.
Yeah, it's not played for that.
I'm up high. No, I'm
gag.
Yeah. A street vendor shouts from his stand across the street. Street vendor says, "Hey, you're that guy on YouTube, right? Do a flip." The masked man waves.
That's pretty much it.
No, because he does a flip.
I know, but
that's not the scene.
That's the essence of the scene.
I say it's not the essence of the scene. I think we just read very much a work in progress. The main joke in the scene is that you think he's up high and he's only up on the
second
floor.
That's true, yeah.
And then you say do a flip and Spider-Man waves?
Oh, yeah, I guess I assumed the wave took place after the flip.
You can't assume that. They would write it in the scene directions.
Yeah, you're right.
Imagine if that.
Very different scene as written.
You're dealing with high and low when you're filming that scene.
I mean, I don't remember 100%. I'm pretty sure, you know, they had cameras up there and down where we were, and we're kind of shooting, you know, mm-hmm. from down up. For some of the takes, Tom Holland was up there, but then they actually did have a guy doing a flip. So then they would swap out, you mm-hmm. know.
Did you talk to Tom Holland in between takes? Or you're so far away.
We're very far away.
You're so far away that you can't have those natural moments of bonding.
No bonding with him. On the way out at the end of the day, I think he said something like, you guys really had me laughing or something.
That's all you want sometimes, yeah. I filmed my most recent superhero-related audition as a self-tape, with my friend and past guest on this show, Shannon O'Neill, reading the other characters via Zoom. She also had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. We did a few takes of the scene, and when I felt like I had a decent one, I called it. I didn't want to put too much work into it, in part because it's important for me not to want it too much. The second I allow myself to get my hopes up, my odds of booking something go way down. This is probably just pure irrational superstition on my part, but it feels true.
When the Marvel Unlimited app came out, I'm pretty sure every time I saw you for a period of
about
3 months, you would lead with, "Do you know about this new Marvel Unlimited app?"
I would forget that we had talked about it every time.
I think
I may have a neurological problem. My wife has pointed out
Chris Gethard is probably the biggest Marvel fan I know. He's passionate and smart about it, too. He's emotionally invested. Get him talking about Marvel Comics and you're good to settle in for a while. He won't get tired of talking about it, and he will make it an interesting conversation even if you aren't familiar with the specific comics he's talking about.
If there was another person in the room that you thought might be interested in hearing about the Marvel Unlimited app, you would
champion the things I love.
Yes.
I champion the things I love, and I champion the people I love.
You were excited about this.
Yeah.
So this leads me to a disappointing acting anecdote or experience, which is
Iron Man 3.
Chris was cast in the 2013 movie Iron Man 3, but his character did not make it to the final cut, which is an experience I would never have wished upon him, because I think there are few people who would have taken it as hard as he did.
It was brutal.
You still have not seen Iron Man 3.
No, it's the one Marvel movie I haven't seen.
You've seen 22 Marvel movies.
Most of them multiple times.
And you haven't seen that one.
Can't
because
do it hurts too much.
That is fascinating to me because you are not someone that generally, I would say, looks away from painful experiences.
No, but I did make a video that was me basically saying I have to vent that I filmed a scene in Iron Man 3 and it's being cut and I have to scream and yell about it on camera because if I don't, I will cry all day.
Growing up, I was obsessed with Marvel comic books. Living in the universe of those characters was a dream come true for me, but it's a dream that died quickly. As the release date's been approaching, my family...
It was brutal, because I got to be the guy operating those crazy, like, green screen, like, fake computer screens where you swipe things around. My scene was with Don Cheadle. It was going to be the first scene in Iron Man 3.
I'm assuming you had a blast filming it.
It was kind of amazing.
I assume you were very excited when you booked this part. You were going to be part of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, it blew my mind.
Felt like everything was happening.
Only Star Wars would have a similar effect, or if I somehow managed to join the WWE. Those are the three things from my childhood that to be a part of them feels like entering a different world. That is its own world that I don't belong to, and now I belong to it.
Describe what it was like when you were filming the scene, just like the atmosphere.
A lot of green screens, huge crew, a lot of pressure on it. Director, very nice guy, Shane Black, great communicator, good notes. Don Cheadle, very kind person. It was very cool to be around his armor. Most of the Marvel-y stuff was going to be put in on green screens later, but I was like in the room with his helmet. At one point, he had to put his helmet on. He did not like it. He expressed that it was a nightmare to have to wear that helmet over and over again, which I never thought about. But yeah, I'm sure that all those actors who have to wear like body suits and helmets, that gets old fast.
Yeah.
Probably gets real sweaty in there. There's a lot of foam in there that catches the sweat. Can't smell good.
I'm assuming you told everybody, because I remember knowing that you had done something for Marvel and then finding out that you were going to be and then not going to be. It was a pretty short window.
I told a close circle of friends. I think by that point in my career, I had learned not to shout things to the hilltops until they are concrete and real.
Yeah.
Or until you get word that thumbs up, it's happening.
How did you find out that you got cut?
I got a phone call from the management team.
They just said it was, did they give you a reason or is just the scene's gone?
Just the whole scene was gone. I did blame myself a little bit. I was having a lot of trouble getting the green screen stuff right. Like they needed me to move my hands in a particular way. Mm-hmm. And I could tell that I was causing some frustration with that. Felt bad about that. But yeah, the whole scene was cut. I think if I had come in and like nailed it or gotten some big laughs, mm-hmm. it could have survived.
Did you have jokes in the scene? Or did you improvise at all when you were filming?
No, it wasn't. It's intimidating to improvise in an environment where everything is technology-based and there's clearly millions of dollars being poured in.
Yeah.
But I think it was more like my presence and my appearance in context of, you know, some. I get cast in a lot of roles where it's like, why is this nerdy guy with the big forehead in a position? In that one, the joke was kind of like, why would this guy be in a position to boss around War Machine?
I've always been pretty optimistic, and partly it's just because the Marvel universe keeps expanding that you'll get another shot.
Well, I did show up in a podcast.
That was like a radio drama?
It was Wolverine the Long Night.
Yeah.
And I play a librarian who has cats in the library. Unnamed librarian, they come in. Some of the main characters take out a map from the library. But the thing that was really so funny to me was inexplicably, the company put my name in the press releases. And I knew, like, people were seeing it and were like, oh my God, Chris, you're in a Marvel thing. This is going to erase the sting of Iron Man 3. And I'm like, this is a podcast where I play a librarian whose name is Librarian. And I have a couple of cats and then they take a map and then I'm out. So that was almost another thing of like, why was I in the press release? Because a similar sting of like, oh, people are bringing this up to me and I'm happy that I did it. And it's a cool thing that I get a kick out of, but I should not be listed as a guest star on this thing. It's embarrassing. But then that's the exact type of thing you point out that I immediately am like, oh, this is so fun. And then I started obviously spreading where people would tweet at me. Oh, I see you're in this thing. I'd be like, brace yourself, baby, because I bring the heat in this one. And then I had a lot of fun when they would tweet me again months later and be like, wait, that was it? So I did. I flipped that one on its head. I turned the lemons into lemonade on that one.
When we return, I'll be talking to the star of the very first Marvel feature film. It's probably not who you think it is.
Disney just released a teaser trailer for their upcoming live-action remake of Pinocchio, starring Tom Hanks as Geppetto, the elderly woodcarver who makes a little wooden puppet who comes to life and becomes his son. And from the looks of it, the movie is going to remain somewhat faithful to the feel of the original 1940 animated version, which brings to mind one thing. Mattresses. Now, Pinocchio has more than one scene devoted to showing us the main character's individual sleeping situations. Geppetto in what appears to be a comfortable single, or possibly a twin, while his cat, Figaro, nestles into a cozy-looking cat-sized bed. Meanwhile, the goldfish, Cleo, sleeps happily in her fishbowl, and Jiminy Cricket fashions a makeshift bed on the fingerboard of a violin. Jiminy seems satisfied at first, declaring, "This is my idea of comfort. Solid comfort." And yet, just a few scenes later, we see that Jiminy has upgraded to a better model. A small but roomy matchbox that is easier on his back. But even then, I think Jiminy could do a lot better if he just consulted Helix Sleep. They have a quiz you can take online. It's really quick, takes about 2 minutes, and they can tell you exactly which mattress is right for your body type and sleep preferences.
Everybody is different, and Helix knows that, so they have several different kinds of mattresses to choose from. They have soft, medium, and firm mattresses, mattresses to cool you down if you sleep hot, and even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-size folks. I took the Helix quiz, and I was matched with the Midnight Lux mattress because I wanted something that would accommodate tossing and turning. It was neither too soft nor too firm. It feels great. If I had to rank it on a comfort level from Jiminy to Geppetto, with Geppetto being the highest, I wouldn't even hesitate. It's a Geppetto. So if you're looking for a mattress, it's really simple. You take the quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to a mattress store again. And you don't have to take my word for it. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine. Just go to helixsleep.com/deadeyes. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights, risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it. But you will. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/deadeyes. That's up to $200 on all mattress orders plus 2 free pillows at helixsleep.com/deadeyes. What interferes with your happiness? Is something preventing you from achieving your goals? We talk a lot about disappointment on this podcast, how hard it is for all of us when we don't get what we want, when things aren't going our way. In my own experience, I can't help but think that there were times when it might have been healthier if I had talked to somebody who was qualified to help me deal with my disappointment back when I was really feeling it. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp, which can connect you with a licensed professional therapist based on your specific personal needs. It's safe, it's convenient, it's online. You can start communicating in less than 24 hours. And it's not self-help, it's professional counseling. BetterHelp will make sure you find the therapist who's right for you. And they make it easy and free to change counselors if you need to, till you find the one you're happy with. It's more affordable than traditional offline, in-person counseling, and financial aid is available. You can send a message to your counselor anytime, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, all without ever having to go to a physical office and sit in a waiting room. And because BetterHelp isn't limited by geography, there's a broad range of expertise available, a lot more than you might have access to wherever you're currently living. Licensed professional counselors who are specialized in depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief, self-esteem. Anything you share is confidential, of course. You can check out the testimonials posted daily on their website. Start living a happier life today. Listeners of this podcast get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/deadeyes. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/deadeyes. After speaking with someone who defeated me in pursuit of a Marvel role, and someone else who was defeated by the process only to fight another day, I thought it might be a good idea to talk to someone who was there at the beginning, who helped start it all. The leading actor in the very first feature film to be based on a Marvel comic. I'm referring, of course, to Leah Thompson, the human star of the 1986 movie Howard the Duck. Just 3 years earlier, she made her big screen debut in Jaws 3D. And by 1985, she was starring as Marty McFly's mom in Back to the Future. The enormous success of that film led to her being cast in the role of Beverly Switzler, lead singer in the all-girl rock band Cherry Bomb, who befriends the duck from another planet and helps him save the world. But Howard the Duck was not a hit. It ended up being one of the most notorious box office disappointments of the 20th century. Despite that, and the bad reviews from critics, Leah never disowned it. Her superpower is that she's able to balance any embarrassment she might feel about Howard the Duck's failure with a great sense of humility. Remember the unwatchably bad presidential debate that happened not too long ago? Everyone on Twitter was trying to find awful things to compare it to.
I saw other people saying that was so terrible and I blank. So I was like, that was the worst experience for me. And I made out with a duck. And of course, the Hollywood Reporter picked that up. Everyone like picked it up and everyone loves it and they're laughing, you know. People just really won't forget about that movie.
Growing up, I read a lot of comics, but I have to admit that Marvel superheroes were not really my thing. I liked funny comics, so the only Marvel titles I bought for myself on a regular basis were the oddball titles like Gru the Wanderer, The Spectacular Spider-Ham, or Howard the Duck. Which is why I was one of the kids who was in the audience for opening weekend of the very first Marvel movie. It was a big deal to me then, and it still is. Decades later, I was eager to learn everything Leah Thompson could teach me about the casting process back before the Marvel Cinematic Universe even existed. Maybe going back to the very beginning would provide me with the insights I was seeking.
I was kind of hot because I'd done Back to the Future at the time at Universal, and Universal was making Howard the Duck. So, yeah, I had to audition, but I was probably on a very short list. When I auditioned for Howard the Duck, I actually went over to the director and the writer's house, and they filmed it. So it was kind of low pressure. I think that's because I was so high up on the list. Mm-hmm. But I remember them being really happy that I had, like, dressed up for the part. Because sometimes, you know, people can be like, ooh, that's pushing it. But I just went all in and dressed the part because I get my character from the clothes, you know. And I had to, like, kind of make myself look like Cyndi Lauper or Madonna. I remember I was in Huntsville, Alabama, trying to buy that kind of, you know, Madonna wear and looking for crosses and stuff like that. It helps me, the shoes and the clothes and everything.
Was there a level of secrecy about Howard the Duck when it was being made?
I guess, but not the same kind of thing because, you know, it wasn't so easy to... That was a long time ago. I didn't have a computer. You know, I didn't have a phone with the pictures in it.
Yeah, they were worried about like Xerox copies or something, right?
Yeah, right.
Like that was the...
Carbon copies of the script. Yeah, it wasn't as secretive. I do remember there was a little bit of secrecy about Back to the Future, but there was a lot of secrecy about what the duck looked like. They really thought it was going to be awesome to unveil this very expensive collection of feathers and latex. So they would like hide from the press. They would like put a sheet around the poor kid that walking out to the locations.
Had you read any of the Howard the Duck comics?
Yeah, they gave me all the Howard the Duck comic books. And I was sad because it wasn't like, the script wasn't as funny as in the comic books. He's a little bit more angry or something. I liked that. They tortured me for a long time about the singing. Once I got the part, they were like, we're not sure we're going to let you sing, but maybe we will. We'll record it. Maybe we'll record somebody else. They really tortured me because, you know, obviously they were going to dub over the puppeteer that was doing the duck. So it didn't seem like that big of a step to do that. But it was all humiliating. I mean, you know, if you're talking about humiliation in Hollywood, it was all humiliating. My nickname was Dawn. Because they would shoot the ducks close up first, and at dawn, they would shoot mine. You know, I'd be halfway through any kind of take because the technology was so bad, and all of a sudden, the duck would become possessed. It would just, like, start going like, it would be like someone's garage door opener or a plane flying low would activate the mechanics in the duck's face.
Oh, no.
So it was, you know, and I was trying to be really sincere.
What did you think when you first saw the film? Did you see it at a premiere or?
Yes, I went to a premiere. They had trained ducks walking around in this very expensive premiere. And there was a feeling that we were running into a car crash, that it was not going to be good. Premieres never feel good. They just don't. They're always scary. It's always like so, you feel so insecure and so scared. And so that was rough. But I think I looked pretty. I don't know. But I remembered being just really sweating through it and being really scared. But I'm still proud of that performance. And I love that there's so many fans of it still. I think there's something about the kind of iconoclast flavor of Howard the Duck that makes people want to love it, even though it's so maligned. They keep releasing new DVDs. So, you know, they're not doing that to be nice to me. They're doing it because people buy it. And I think it was a lot like that because people showed it to their kids and it was pretty dirty. You know, there's like duck nipples, man.
You know, when you're a kid and you're watching stuff that you feel like is not for you, it's a little exciting, but then it's also a little bit terrifying. Mm-hmm. Because you don't understand it. You don't know who to talk to about it. You don't want to talk to your parents about it. You know, it's just like within like the first 5 minutes, you see like a female duck with breasts in a bath. Do you talk to your friends about that? Who do you talk to about that?
Not your pastor.
Yeah.
I know. It's always interesting. And I'm always getting all these comments like, I was very confused. You know, you kind of set up my sexuality in a weird way. Like people say this stuff all the time to me. And I just read a bunch of comments like that were really funny and really, really heartening. A lot of people, they always stand up for Howard the Duck. It's funny. Someone on Twitter today just said to me, I taught a whole class about hardworking actors having to do yeoman duty, you know, and you were the Howard the Duck and you were the one that I studied because you had nothing to work with and you had to sell this crazy love story with this insane mechanical duck with a 7-year-old boy inside of it.
I assume the only actor who's worked with both Jaws and Howard the Duck. Two notoriously difficult
co-stars.
Yeah, just in terms of like the mechanics of making them exist. Both title characters, both very, very tricky from a practical point of view.
Yes, and they were both extremely, extremely temperamental. Mm-hmm. In terms of like working. The first day of my first movie ever was on Jaws 3D, and it was working with the shark. They were like, okay, I literally thought they were trying to kill me. They were like, it's the moment in the film, if you've studied it, the epic moment when the shark lunges out at the water to get me. And they push this button and nothing happened. And they also were trying to shoot it in 3D, and they had no idea how to do that really with these giant cameras. So they pushed this button and it was like supposed to just like mechanically kind of come out of the water and nothing happened. So we waited like a half a day until they finally figured it out. And then they were like, okay, Leah, stand here while 2,000 pounds of metal and plastic comes lunging at you. And I was like, okay, sha.
I feel like you've worked with so many people. Have you ever come across Tom Hanks in your travels? Have you ever had any interactions or?
Yeah, he's a great guy. Every time I meet him, I really like him. He's just like, you know, he's a national treasure. So
yeah,
I feel like I understand your story about Band of Brothers because when I was a dancer, I started out as a ballet dancer and I worked really hard. I was like I finally get to New York. I'm in the farm team of the American Ballet Theater. And they're about to decide who they're going to hire. And Baryshnikov came up to me. And, you know, he's like 5'5", you know. And he comes up to me and he goes, I'm sorry, you're just too stocky. You're lovely. You've got a pretty face, but you're too stocky. And I was like, wow, use that word. And it was very traumatic to me. So I closed my locker, quit dancing, and got a Burger King commercial. Boom! Went from ballet to Burger King.
An exciting message from Burger King.
We know you're watching the game, but you're waiting for something more exciting. Ready? Broiling beef frying, nearly 2-1 in the Coast to Coast survey. Not better than baseball? Think about it.
You know why I got it? Because I can say, aren't ya? Aren't ya hungry? That's hard.
Where are you from?
Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah. Okay, so it's that Midwestern sort of twang.
Yeah, they couldn't find anybody to say, aren't ya?
Aren't ya?
Because you couldn't say, aren't you?
No.
Aren't ya? You had to say, aren't ya? You had to put the CH on it.
Leah has had some iconic roles and continues to have a great career as an actor and director. But something about Howard the Duck still resonates. Maybe it's the underdog aspect of it all. How something that is perceived to be a failure can actually plant the seed for future success.
I do feel proud to be one of the first Marvel movies. And I actually went into Marvel to pitch a different version of Howard the Duck that I wanted to direct. So that was really fun. I went with Joe Quintone, who was the author of the last run of the Howard the Duck comic books. And they didn't say no, but they didn't say yes.
Did they say maybe? Is it still on the table?
They said, these things, you know, we work it out so many years in advance and we have plans, because I was using some other characters from the Marvel Universe. And you're inspiring me to go back to them and go, Joe and I's idea was really cool.
I feel like there was an era there where like certain movies would become lightning rods, or they become like a shorthand conversation point.
It's so funny. One time my husband had a movie, you know, like I told you, when movies come out, it's nothing but a nightmare. And my husband, Howard Deutsch, directed The Great Outdoors, which is also like a cult movie with Dan Aykroyd and John Candy.
Yeah.
And we were waiting for the very first review and we were in bed. And the first review came on the TV and the guy says, if you have a chance to see a double feature of Ishtar and Howard the Duck or this movie, go see the double feature.
Wow.
We just like turned off the TV and we're like, how did they get us both?
It feels so personal.
I know. It was something to live down, that's for sure. And that's how I actually met my husband, because when Howard the Duck came out and the reviews were so bad and brutal and, you know, they thought they were, you know, it was easy punning. Mm-hmm. I was so upset that I took a movie right away that I had already turned down, which was Some Kind of Wonderful that my husband directed. I'd already turned it down, but I was like, I better get on the bicycle. I'll never work again. It was like a nightmare. I remember crying through the first day of shooting because people were making fun of me on the crew.
Really?
Yeah, pretty dark, huh?
Behind your back or to your face?
I kind of both.
Oh, wow.
Like to my side. Not my back, oh, but no. Not my face, but on the side.
Wow.
It was hard to live through. People are brutal, man.
I waited to hear back about the project I had auditioned for. I made inquiries, and I learned that, to use their words, I was still in the mix. I started to think about the future and how a role like this could come to define the next several years of my life. A recent article promoting a comedy show I do described me as an actor best known for being fired by Tom Hanks. And I started to wonder if that would always be true, or if another destiny awaited me at the end of this long and silent process. For a brief moment, I allowed myself to ponder a future in which I booked this role, kept this beard, and never looked back again. And then the answer came. It was a no. I got the email and it was over. The role would go to someone else, and good for them. I could shave my beard if I wanted to. I could do anything now. I owed nothing to anyone. They owed nothing to me. But if there's one thing I've learned, it's that heroes don't give up in the face of rejection. They move on to fight the next battle. Plus, there are always sequel opportunities.
There's no reason that Street Vendor shouldn't come back. You could be in almost every Marvel movie.
I do think it would have been funny if I had been in Far From Home as like French Street Vendor.
I think that joke is such a missed opportunity, because people do remember that scene.
It would have been funny.
I hope that Leah will get to direct a Howard the Duck reboot. She deserves it.
Who better to direct it? That's my point. Like, who better? Who understands the fans more? I understand the comic fans. I understand the movie fans. I can bring them together.
And I still hold out hope for Chris. Being cut out of Iron Man 3 just means that he can still be cast as someone even cooler in the comic universe he grew up loving.
But I gotta say, as your friend, you're sitting here telling me that I'm gonna be in a Marvel movie someday, but I think that what I and you deep down and a lot of the people listening know is what you're really saying is you're gonna be in a Tom Hanks movie someday.
Yeah. I know I am.
It's gonna happen. It's not about me in a Marvel movie. This is about you in a Tom Hanks movie.
I think it'd be great to be able to have a conversation with him where we got relaxed enough to the point where it felt like a real conversation and not me being frightened if...
No, I'm not trying to stress you out.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw down the gauntlet and say it's not enough.
I need to act in front of him and have him keep it in the movie.
You at least need to walk through the background of a scene that he's in. And here's the thing. I think if you talk to him and you tell him this story, he'll be blown away. He'll feel a range of emotions. He'll laugh. He'll defend himself and say that's just how this industry works. He'll probably feel bad that he threw you for such a loop. And at the end of the day, I bet he might just go, we need a barista in this movie. It might as well be you.
I don't want to just play a barista and walk in the background. I want to do something meaty. I want to be able to act.
That's not what it was.
I know that's not what it was
in Band of Brothers. Maybe that's part of the problem with this, Connor.
Yeah.
That's your ego. That's the problem, Connor.
Mm.
I want to go in and do some big meaty thing. That's not what Band of Brothers was. The Band of Brothers was you getting told to go get a bacon sandwich and a cup of tea.
Whatever the initial emotional investment was, interest has accrued.
This is your ego getting in the way.
Maybe.
And the part of you that needs to put out this fire and stop this from burning in your soul.
Right.
Needs to be ego-free in a very zen way.
You think that makes me whole, though, if I just do a small part?
If I can sign up either through a streaming service, cable package, movie ticket, Tom Hanks' vehicle, where you and he are on the screen at the same time, in any context,
yeah,
closes this loop.
Where does this leave me? Just another guy in Queens, New York, waiting for my radioactive spider bite, gamma ray explosion. I feel a quiet calm. A sense that somehow I am still on a path that will lead me eventually to be cast in a role that awaits me, somewhere in the pantheon of superhero cinema. But that won't happen until the time is right. When they have a need for a character actor in his mid to late 40s, slightly out of shape but with good comic timing, playing a supporting role alongside a hero or a villain, to be played perhaps by a 2-time Academy Award winner in his mid to late 60s.
Dead Eyes is a production of HeadGum Studios. It was created by me, Connor Ratliff. It's written by me, and it's mostly me that you hear talking, including now. The show is produced and edited by Harry Nelson and Mike Comite. Special thanks to my guests, Zach Cherry, Chris Gethard, and Leah Thompson. And thanks to Amy Mann for letting us use this song that's playing in the background. It's called Humpty Dumpty, the opening track from her 2002 album, Lost in Space. If you like Dead Eyes, please do all the things that podcasts ask you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us on Twitter at Dead Eyes Podcast. Talk about us nicely on social media. If you want to reach out, the email address is deadeyespodcast@gmail.com. Please tell your friends about this show, especially if you are friends with Tom Hanks, who has played a lot of iconic characters over the past decade. Real-life ones like Mr. Rogers, Ben Bradley, Walt Disney, and Chesley Sully Sullenberger, in addition to reprising his tentpole blockbuster heroes Toy Cowboy Woody and symbologist Robert Langdon. But none of them, technically, superheroes. He's even played a villain. Eamon Bailey in Dave Eggers' The Circle, a Bill Gates-style tech billionaire with a friendly public demeanor and a sinister secret agenda. It's a performance that would have fit right in any Marvel or DC superhero movie. He doesn't get to throw a shield at anybody, but he does sort of try to take over the world. See you next time. Stay safe. Wear a mask. Enough said.
That was a HeadGum Original.